The origin of the word Bihana is unknown, though there are several theories. Today, this word is a term used to designate the coming of the Spaniards. The main features of this story bear a strong resemblance to the ancient legend of Quetzalcoatl, Mexican culture god of the Mayas, Toltecs, and later adopted by the Aztecs. He is also associated with the sun, and being originally a Mayan god, he did not require human sacrifice. Quetzalcoatl was the god of arts and crafts, of the calendar, and of culture in general. There was an ancient legend that the great culture god, Quetzalcoatl, after instructing the people in the useful arts, departed eastward over the sea, promising to return at a definite time in the future. According to tradition, he was white-skinned and bearded. The arrival of the Spaniards in the appropriate year led Montezuma II Comma, who had been trained as a priest and been carefully sheltered from the mainstream world, to welcome them. It was a policy that proved fatal for the natives. The experience of the Incas in South America with Pizarro was very similar, with the same devastating results. 240. The legend of Star Crush. Concerning myths in Native American cultures, many of them have explanatory elements. This means the story uses ingenious ways to explain certain phenomena. Many are called explanatory tales, which are used to explain things in everyday life, identifying marks on animals, birds, etc. These bear a marked resemblance to Tuyn's children's stories. Some researchers have concluded that there are a considerable number of cases where a definite tale is demonstrably older than the thing it is now supposed to explain, as through the story is the original thing and the explanation an afterthought. This can lead to the conclusion that in North America tales do not originate as explanations. Researchers found that a considerable part of the tales known to one tribe were known also, sometimes in slightly different forms, to all neighboring tribes. They found that a tale could travel for enormous distances. In some cases, tales wandered thousands of miles from what was considered their original home. This is particularly true of some tribes in the Plain States whose origin was thought to be of the Eastern Forest Native Americans. They migrated from their old homes in the East with the encouragement of their culturally related neighboring tribes and prior to the European invasion, which got underway in the 17th century. Another example are certain tales that were common to the natives of eastern Greenland and western Alaska in the early 1900s and were also known to tribes as far south as the Arkansas River. A given tale usually radiated out from some central point, losing its character little by little in direct proportion to the distance from this center. This helped the investigators to shed light on the problem of dropping off of the explanatory significance of tales. It became evident that very profound discrepancies existed in the explanations attached to certain tales by different peoples. Some explained one thing, some another, and others nothing at all. While the various tales changed at the hands of different people, the explanations changed much more rapidly and radically. The absence of explanations were accounted for on the ground that they had dropped off. When they examined the tales in their various forms, they concluded, research, 241, it was impossible to determine which was the original. They felt that the same complicated tale could not have been independently invented each time an explanation was needed, thus many of the tales were a corruption or reinterpretation of the original. Later myths can be recognized as containing European elements, and some have been influenced by missionaries. These elements were not present in the original form. In some cases, the natives were forbidden to recite the old tales because they were considered pagan and sacrilegious. In many of these cases, the original tales were slowly forgotten or changed to fit in with the missionary requirements. The originals would be very difficult to find, especially in the form used before the coming and the influence of Europeans. Considering these difficulties, I think it is remarkable that I was able to find one story that has passed down in an unpolluted form, and is exactly as Tuyn told it to the children of his day. After much searching, I found this one in an old book. It was recited to the author and explorer on the Six Nations Reserve in Canada in the late 1800s. It is part of a longer narrative centering around a fox. How the bear lost his tail. The cunning fox next met a bear who was also anxious to procure some fish. "Well," replied Fair Fox, Down at the river you will find an air hole in the ice semicolon just butty or tail down it as I did and you can draw out the fishes for stays you wish. The bear followed the directions carefully, but the weather being cold, instead of securing a fish, his tail was frozen off. This accounts for the tailless condition of the bear. It appears that the only way some of this ancient knowledge can be retrieved is through this unusual method of hypnotic regression. The knowledge is still there in the subconscious memory banks of people living on the earth today. It is just a matter of regressing an excellent subject back through the corridors of time to a life when the information was common knowledge. Nothing can ever be, 24-2. The legend of Star Crush, totally lost or forgotten as long as the human mind survives. What is written in the subconscious cannot be erased. Oh, settle an argument, as least within himself. The writer of an article written in 1900 asked, what, then, and where, then, is the origin of the Indian? The Indian, what is he, whence is he? I know not, do you? What do I think? Since all of the theories appear to be true, at least in part, why not call them all true and be done with it? Could anything more strikingly indicate that the Indian belongs to the whole universal race of mankind? That the common blood of brotherhood leaps within our veins, that he is brother to the whole wide world? All signs point to the fact that he is the child of the ages, one of the numerous progeny of old Mother Earth, and that the secret of his primitive origin is locked up beyond our ken, together with the great mystery of the origin of life. Whence he came we do not know. But it is certain that he has inhabited this continent for a very long period of time, long enough to have established here a people, a race, well differentiated, and concerning whose purity and antiquity there can be no question. It may be that the unity of the human race is a fact so profound that all attempts at a fundamental classification to be used in all the departments of anthropology will fail, and that the human family will be considered as one race. Many individuals of Aboriginal and mixed bloods have disappeared, but they have disappeared not by extinction, but by absorption. It is very apparent that the Indian blood is not dead, it is not extinct, no, it is diffused, absorbed, assimilated, term it anything you will, save death. His race may disappear, but the blood will not die. To this I can only add that this statement also applies to the blood of the aliens. It will live forever in the veins of mankind. Chapter 19, The End. Of the adventurer did not do research by traveling to the tribes and speaking to elders, because I did not believe this would yield the information I was looking for. I am aware that many books have been written in recent years by people who claim they are passing on ancient legends and prophecies of coming events. These are reported to have come from older members of the tribes who kept the sacred knowledge. In some cases, these Native Americans were ostracized by their people for revealing this knowledge to the white man, who was considered their traditional enemy. It is possible these legends are genuine, but they would have had to survive orally through many years of persecution, annihilation, prejudice, separation and relocation. I could find no record of them in the annals of the early researchers. It became obvious to me that I would never be able to find the legends of Tuin's people. That noble race had vanished many years ago and only their genes were passed along to our time. The bits that I managed to glean were as small crumbs of a once beautiful and whole loaf. A loaf that has crumbled, been devoured and disappeared. But according to Tuin, the blood that flows through many Native American tribes contains a bit of the old ones. The memory is there, still visible in the DNA. Maybe that will have to be enough, just to know that the Native Americans had a noble origin that is not acknowledged by the world as a whole. That some of their ancestors came from the stars and survived against great odds. As Tuin said, we have the wonderful story back at least for this 243-244. The legend of Star Crush, generation. Does this mean that it will disappear again into the sands of time? If it does, maybe the records of our own civilization will also be wiped from the face of the earth, and no one will ever know that we existed. It is beginning to be accepted as fact that this has occurred many, many times in the ancient past. Other civilizations have risen, flourished and died, leaving nothing to mark their passing. Except the human being. If we believe in the reality of reincarnation, we believe that this has not been our only life. then it would be reasonable to assume that we may have lived in those other bygone civilizations that perished from the face of the earth in cataclysms. We know our own death is nothing to fear because we have survived it countless times before. Thus we also know that we can survive the death of a civilization, a nation or a world. These things are motivated by cycles just as our own lives are. The immortal human soul can triumph over any catastrophe and return again and again to constantly rebuild and improve what has been destroyed. Just as humans shall rise again, the cycle can turn and civilizations and worlds can rise again. Such is the indomitable spirit of life. No destruction is permanent. Humans have always been survivors and they will continue to be. They will rebuild and reshape their lives, but they will always remain. We are now discovering that the memories of these lost civilizations are contained in the subconscious of people living today. These memories are beginning to surface and thus the stories of these people will never die. This may be the uncharted space for scientists of the future to explore. This may be where lost history is to be unearthed, through the use of regressive hypnosis rather than the archaeologist's shovel. _After my research was completed, the story of Tuan and his ancestors was still just a story, almost impossible to prove. But I like to believe that it could have happened, that it is a forgotten part of our history. The story of the Old Ones is one of adventure. The indomitable spirit of exploration that founded our country, perseverance in the face of danger and the unknown, and the end of the adventure. 245, inextinguishable flame of hope. What better legacy to bequest to the human race, no matter where they originated? I can imagine the sense of finality these people must have felt when forced to leave their home planet. Because of political conditions, they could no longer safely remain there. They knew when they set out on the voyage across the void, that they would never see their planet again, they would never be able to return home. It was a final closing of the door, a cutting off from everything that had been familiar to them. But I suppose the sense of wonder, the curiosity of the unknown was also present. They would be breaking new frontiers, going where no one had ever been before. But they would also be unable to share what they found with their homeland because they would become people without a country. The home planet did not want any further contact with them. As far as they were concerned, the pioneers would cease to exist. Drastic perhaps, but in their eyes it was better than death. So they set out, their eyes on a far distant star. They had to look forward, there could be no looking back. Life aboard the ships might have been boring. They had everything they needed to survive. They had planned well, probably years in advance. But they knew that generations would grow up within the confines of the ship before they would once again touch solid ground. Many years of our time passed before they came close to the gravity of our planet while passing through our solar system. Earth was not their destination. They would never have stopped here if it had not been for a malfunction in the ship. Whether delayed sabotage or not, they were placed in a crisis situation. They knew they could not continue with the others, and the others could not wait and help them. They would have to land somewhere to make repairs, and hopefully catch up with the others later. They were confused when they saw the moon. According to their scientific theories, it was too large of a solar body to be a satellite. At first they were uncertain whether to land on the moon or on the planet. Their technology must have shown them that the Earth had a compatible atmosphere, so they chose to land here. This was fortunate, because they had no way of, 246, the legend of Star Crush, knowing that repair would be impossible and they would be stranded forever. To land on the moon would have meant certain death. I can imagine the wonder, awe and perhaps terror as they came out of the ship into the open air. Generations had been raised entirely within the walls of the ship, they had never seen the open spaces. The sight of such vast expanses of air and land must have been overwhelming in the beginning. But there was more immediate dangers. They found that the sun was not kind to them. Their bodies were not compatible to the harsh rays and the harmful radiation. They stayed within the safety of the ship, emerging only at night to try to make repairs. When it became obvious that they would never be able to escape from the planet, they began to adjust to the idea that this would be their new home. After all, they were intending to colonize a planet anyway, Even though this had not been their first choice, they would have to learn to adapt and adjust. Their lives depended upon it. They discovered there was a small group of original Aborigines living in the mountainous valley. This gave them hope for their own survival. If a humanoid species could survive, then they could also. The Aborigines were in awe of the space travelers in the beginning and considered them to be gods that had come down to Earth. But in time they came to realize these were only people like themselves. The adjustments were not easy. Both the old ones and the first ones relied on telepathic communication, and because they were so different it was physically painful to be in close proximity with each other. But as time passed the old ones realized that the radiation of the sun was creating terrible genetic problems. Their only hope for survival was to mix with the first people. When it comes down to the alternative of living or dying, the human spirit will find a way. This could be another of the legacies that were passed down to us. As time continued to pass they saw that the interbreeding was producing viable offspring, and their future here was assured. They gradually adjusted and cannibalized the dead ship to build houses. To me one of the most painful of their experiences must have been the loss of the knowledge that was contained in the computers. The end of the adventure, 247. They tried to save what they could by transferring it to writing. But there was so much, so much. The computer must have held more than several of our libraries. How does one decide what is essential to preserve, and what is to be thrown away? They decided that the portions of the knowledge pertaining to their survival would be the most important parts. Instruction that was needed to carve out a living in an alien surrounding. The portions that dealt with growing food, making clothing, medicine and healing arts. The knowledge that would have been important only on their home planet may have been the first to be discarded. It was a final cutting off, as they lost the history of their origin. Mathematics, other sciences, reading and writing survived for a while, but was gradually relegated to the care of one person as the pressures of survival became more important. Over time more and more of their artifacts disappeared and remained only in the memories described in the legends. It must have been difficult for them to let everything from the ship go. They wanted to hang on to some of the memories at least, so they kept and passed down some of the objects from the ship. The later descendants didn't understand the purpose of these artifacts and they took on a religious and revered quality. They were things that had belonged to the old ones and thus were protected. It is remarkable that the legacy of these space travelers could have survived at all, let alone traverse the apparent thousands of years between the forced landing and Duin's time. If his group had not been so isolated, the knowledge probably would have been absorbed, diluted and changed many generations before his time. But they were completely cut off from any contaminating influence. They were the only people in the world. It was absolutely essential to their survival that all knowledge be preserved. Each person had a talent that had to be passed on to the descendants. The loss of any person's ability was unthinkable because it was essential to the welfare of the village as a whole. Thus the passing on of each one's trade was part of their lifestyle and greatly respected. The same thing was true of the legends. They felt they must be preserved, and as accurately as possible. There was almost a religious quality about this. Extreme, 248. The legend of Star Crush, care was taken that the legends remain true to form. Nothing could be added, and nothing could be taken away. It became a sacred duty of the group to preserve and protect the purity of the legends, even though they did not understand a great portion of them. It was only the group's dedication and isolation that kept the tales intact for such a long time. Our alien ancestors also passed down a true love and respect for Mother Earth, their adopted home. This is deeply instilled in the North American Indian cultures. But eventually the inevitable happened, as it always has and always will. Outside influences came into the valley. The group must have been in absolute awe and terribly frightened to find that they were not the only ones existing in the world. People like themselves had come into their homeland and life would never be the same again. Tuin was not alive to see it, but he was one of the few that knew it was true because he had seen other people during his walking adventures outside the area. But the village had not believed him. His stories became part of their legends. They did not believe until they saw for themselves. After that, it was only a matter of time until the outside people would cause their way of life to deteriorate, and the legends to be corrupted. Tuin's life by itself was not remarkable. He lived a simple life free from apparent worries. He had great psychic abilities and used them to guide him in his hunting. He had strong religious and spiritual beliefs, although he did not consider them as such. He lived his entire life in service to the others in his village. By providing meat, he did the job he was meant to do and helped the village survive. He did not consider this to be remarkable. It was what was expected of him, and he did it without question. He loved the outdoors and the freedom of nature, and he respected all life. He lived among a people who had learned to live without fear, and with complete caring for their fellow creatures. He laughed and he loved, and although he was ordinary by some standards, I believe he was quite a remarkable untainted person. These are all wonderful qualities for anyone to develop in their life upon this earth. But I believe the most remarkable service that he performed was one that he did not, the end of the adventure, 249, consciously intend. A service that was performed through regressive hypnosis thousands of years after his death, long after all traces of his village and the artifacts were turned to dust. I think his greatest service was his ability to transfer his beloved legends through the barriers of time and space, and present them once again to our world. The old ones would have been very proud. They have not been forgotten. Their story has returned through the inexplicable mind corridors of humans. Our origins have been returned to us as a gift from the past. We are reminded that our legacy is from the stars. Let us not forget again. About Arthur the Ganon was born 1931, in St. Louis, Missouri. She was educated, and lived in Missouri until her marriage in 1951 to a career Navy man. She spent the next 2 years traveling all over the world as a typical Navy wife and raised her family. In 1968 she had her first exposure to reincarnation via regressive hypnosis, when her husband, an amateur hypnotist, stumbled across the past life of a woman he was working with who had a weight problem. At that time the past life subject was unorthodox and very few people were experimenting in the field. It sparked her interest, but had to be put aside as the demands of family life took precedence. In 1970 her husband was discharged as a disabled veteran, and they retired to the hills of Arkansas. She then started her writing career and began selling her articles to various magazines and newspapers. When her children began lives of their own, her interest in regressive hypnosis and reincarnation was reawakened. She studied the various hypnosis methods and thus developed her own unique technique, which enabled her to gain the most efficient release of information from her subjects. Since 1979 she has regressed and cataloged information gained from hundreds of volunteers. She calls herself a regressionist and a psychic researcher who records lost knowledge. She has also worked with the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, for a number of years. Her published books include Conversations with Nostradamus, 3 volumes, and Jesus and the Essence, which has been published by Gateway Books in England. She has written several other books, to be published, about her most interesting cases. Dolores Cannon has 4 children and 12 grandchildren who demand that she be solidly balanced between the real world of her family and the unseen world of her work. If you wish to correspond with Dolores about her work, you may write to her at the following address. Please enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope for her reply. Dolores Gannon, P.O. Box 754, Huntsville, Arkansas 72740075425.